Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alfader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, I'm a little bit of mixed emotions here. My Buckeyes lost last weekend to Penn State, but the Indians begin the World Series tonight, so if I seem a bit distracted, well, I got it on mute here on the screen, so I'm not going to miss a minute. But hey, back to golf. Justin Thomas repeated in Malaysia. Minji Lee captured her second win of the year, and Patty Harrington won in Portugal. You remember him? He's won a couple majors sometime a long time ago. Hey, Carl, we got a lot of golf to talk about, so let's go.
Let's go and let's start. And we have a VIU, very important guest of the week. His name is Jeff Root. You don't want to miss it. We're going to keep talking about golf biz and media and the mergers and all that stuff. So we're going to make it interesting for Fred so that he stays here and doesn't watch the Indians. And I don't know if they're going to win. You know, Cubs look like they're going to win, but I don't know. We'll leave that for later. But anyway, you know, let's start as usual with the weekend back thing. And you mentioned it, Justin Thomas. Man, so late. He would have done this before the Ryder Cup. He would have been there. I wanted him in the Ryder Cup, but he got an early start now for the next team because, you know, he began that final round at the TPC Kuala Lumpur. He was trailing India's Anirvan Lahiri by 4 shots. But, you know, that gap was soon wiped out as Lahiri stumbled to a quadruple bogey on the third hole. Thomas was quick to take advantage on the par 3 fourth, firing an excellent tee shot within a few feet of the cup and making a birdie. A further birdie at the next hole, and Thomas was in total control there. Thomas birdied the ninth and then made the turn at 20 under par for the tournament. And although Lahiri was battling strongly, he was unable to get back on terms with the young defending champion. A birdie at the 16th and another at the 17th sealed Thomas' position at the top of the board. He held steady down the home hole and a year after setting the tournament record of 26 under 262, the 23-year-old American finished at 23 under par for his second PGA Tour title, both at the CIMB Classic in back-to-back fashion. You know, Thomas, he's widely regarded as one of golf's up-and-coming young players. His deft wedge play and approach shots were definitely a major plus in Malaysia's hot and humid conditions, which were ideal for scoring. Thomas said he especially drew confidence from being able to lead the first two rounds and come back for the win after faltering in round three. On Saturday, he was cruising towards the title when he dropped 4 shots in a three-hole stretch to start the back nine. That's when Anirvan Lahiri was in the driver's seat and stretched to a 4-stroke lead coming into the final round. But as Thomas was seemingly out of contention after that poor first half to his third round, he turned on the afterburners on the run for home. He birdied his last 5 holes, which he credits to be the best 5 holes he has ever played in his life, to give himself a chance on Sunday, on which he then birdied 4 of the first 5 in his bogey-free final. You know, he has also put in a solid showing at the previous week in the Safeway Open, which is the PGA Tour's season opener, believe it or not, finishing just 4 strokes off the lead. And with this victory, Thomas has taken the early lead in the 2016-17 FedEx Cup race. Hideki Matsuyama, he made a great putt on the final green to post a final round of 66, but that wasn't good enough to win, but it was good enough to break clear of a tie for second place. He finished on 21 under, alone in second. Lahiri and Derek Fathauer were tied for third. Well, anyway, Fred, he did extremely well to bounce back from a disastrous quadruple bogey 9 on the third hole in the final round. He played the remaining holes at TPC Kuala Lumpur and 4 under par to limit the damage and claim a share of third plus a check of $406,000.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff there, Carlos. Your guy Hideki, you know, you're always picking Hideki. He finished runner-up there, so he had a good week. Did you notice that Keegan Bradley got a solo 6? So maybe he's getting his putting ironed out. He'll have a much better 2017 than 2007. Maybe he can take some lessons. We're going to talk about it later. Maybe he can take some lessons, get that rock star guy. We're going to talk about that later, to come and talk to him that worked with the Fries.com winner. Did you also see Ryo Ishikawa's name on there? We have not seen him for a while.
Yeah.
He's not been around the tour. Russell Knox finished T10. He just keeps on playing well. Should have been on the Ryder Cup team. We've talked about that. And also some guys down there at T17. You got Ian Poulter. You remember him? He used to be a player. He used to be able to play a little bit. I guess he had a lot of injuries in 2016, so we shouldn't get on Ian too much. He was there at the Ryder Cup as a vice captain. Ryan Moore, Sergio Garcia, Emiliano Grillo, all those guys finished T17. So a lot of good names at the CIMB. Also, Carlos, you know, there's a big tournament this week in China, the WGC HSBC Champions, and read today where Rory McIlroy, Adam Scott, and Bubba Watson are going to be paired together on Thursday, Friday. Are you going to be watching that? That might be fun to watch, huh?
Definitely. It should be fun to watch by the time that it's going to be aired. I might be sleeping.
You're not going to get up at 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning to watch that?
I'm sorry.
Hey, Carlos, we got a lot of LPGA Tour news tonight, starting off with Minji Lee won the Blue Bay Championship. She had a commanding 6-shot lead after the first 36 holes. However, Jessica Korda caught her on Saturday when Minji skied to a 73. Korda and Arina Jutanagarn battled Minji down the stretch on Sunday. Lee's bogey at the 17th left her tied with Arina at minus 12, and Korda was one back at minus 11. Lee was able to birdie the final hole to secure her second win of the season. I don't know if you saw it or not, but Jutanagarn tried to hit driver and just mutilated it. I mean, it was so far left. It was in the middle of a pond. She didn't miss the fairway by much, only by about 40 yards. So she went back that 2-iron and then hit it in the fairway. That cost her the win. In 25 events this year, Minji Lee has made 24 cuts with 7 top 10 finishes, including this was her second win. With the win, she moves to number 15 in the Rolex Women's World Golf Rankings. The $315,000 first-place check gives her $1.1 million for the year and brings her career earnings to $1.985 million. She's not 20 years old yet, Carlos. She's still a teenager. And she becomes only the fifth player to win twice before her 20th birthday. She won the Latte Championship in 2015, and she joins Lydia Ko, Lexi Thompson, Marlene Hagee, and Sandra Haney as the only ones to win a couple times while still teenagers. Hey, Carlos, LPGA Stage 2 Q School was held last week. Some of the girls are going to be moving on to the Stage 3, the final round, for some more cards for next year on the LPGA Tour. College golf coaches have not been very happy with the ongoing LPGA Q School system since the USGA rules changed to allow amateurs access to their annual qualifier. So the LPGA Tour doesn't like their Q School system either. So Juan has announced that they're going to change it. They're going to do a qualifying series. They're going to have a 2 or 3 week tournaments played in the fall in the United States while the LPGA is on its Asian swing, as they are right now. It's going to be similar to the Web.com Tour Finals. Some of the girls from the LPGA Tour that are maybe out of contention or whatever, need to work on their card, are going to come down and play in it. some of the top Sumatra Tour players. Scores will carry over week to week, and the big thing is there are going to be some more television opportunities for these three events in various markets around the U.S. I would imagine they're working with the Golf Channel to televise those. They do all the other LPGA Tour events, unless Fox wants to jump in there somewhere along the line. Juan said that if the tour is in talks with a sponsor, if the deal gets locked down in the next month, the changes will be implemented next year or 2018 at the latest. Some more golf news for the LPGA Tour. Lexi Thompson will pair up with Bryson DeChambeau in the Shark Shootout in Naples December 8th through the 10th. Lexi's only the second female golfer to play in Shark's annual event. Annika Sorenstam played in the event 10 years ago. Finally, this just came across a little bit ago, three U.S. senators today urged the USGA to move the 2017 U.S. Women's Open from Trump Bedminster. My question to this is, don't these guys have something more important to do? Why are they worried? Why are U.S. senators worried about where the LPGA Tour is going to play an event next year? Carlos, I'm going to turn it back to you, and you're going to talk about the European Tour. It really frosts me when U.S. senators do that kind of stuff, especially in an election. The guy's running for president. Why? You know, that just it burns me up, Carlos. I can't handle it.
I can't comment. I have no comments on this. My hands are tied. My hands are tied. So anyway, you're right. I'm going to talk about the European Tour. And you mentioned Paddy Harrington. You remember him? Yeah. He began the final round there at the Victoria Club de Golf in Vilamoura, one behind Anders Hansen and Mikko Koronen. He closed the gap with a birdie on the second hole, but soon he found himself adrift as Hansen and Koronen and defending champ Andy Sullivan all made fast starts. The turning point for Harrington came up the 11th when a poor approach shot saw him short-sighted in a bunker. It looked as though the Irishman might struggle to save par, but he holed out from the sand to secure a surprising birdie. He followed up with another gain at the following hole to take a share of the lead, and then the 45-year-old moved ahead on his own with a birdie at the 14th. But hey, Sullivan joined him atop the board again after birdieing the par 5 17. Harrington then made a birdie of his own at the penultimate hole, and at that stage, he knew a par at the last would give him his first European title since the USPGA Championship of 2008. His drive on the last hole was leaked into the rough on the right, and his second just flew long and right over the green, striking the grandstand. He had a tough lie in the rough, but he played a superb, superb shift to within 5 feet of the cup. He calmly rolled the putt home, punched the air, and was able to celebrate the victory. But, you know, on a packed leaderboard in Portugal, defending champion Andy Sullivan, he finished alone in second, with Koronen and Hansen tied for third. Four men shared fifth. There were Robert Rock, Paul Lowry, David Lebsky, and Chris Paisley. This was Paddy Harrington's first European Tour since the 2008 PGA Championship, although he has won other tournaments around the world since then, including last year's Honda Classic. The victory may make Harrington reconsider his playing schedule for the rest of the season. He had already planned to head stateside, but he may now look towards the season-ending events on the European Tour. Andy Sullivan, he put up a stout defense of his Portugal Masters title, finishing alone in second place. He fired a superb second round of 61, and although he came up just shy, he could be proud of his performance. He was cheered on by Stoolie's Army, which is his team of supporters. He gave it his everything down the stretch, but the putts were refusing to drop in. In the other battle that was being fought there at Vilamoura, the number of players were attempting to secure a spot in the top 111 on the Race to Dubai standings and thereby earn European Tour playing rights for next year. Mikko Koronen did that with some style, while Jason Scribner and Oliver Fisher also moved up into the qualifying places. Those dropping out of the 111 were Craig Lee and Nelly Pepperell, who missed the cut, also Xander Lombard, who didn't play this week. So with that, I end up the European Tour news. Fred, if you have anything else you would like to add before we close, or we can dance.
Yeah, just a quick comment. You know, as I mentioned earlier, the European Tour and the PGA Tour, you know, this is a jointly sanctioned event, the WGC HSBC Championship in Shanghai, China this week. But next week, as you mentioned, the European Tour begins its final series in the race to Dubai. We'll talk about that more then, but just roughly, just real quickly, it is comprised of three events this year, the Turkish Airlines Open, the Nedbank from South Africa, and the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. The first two offer a $7 million purse, while the World Championship hands out $8 million. In addition, the top 15 players are competing for a share of $7.5 million bonus pool. So that's the reason that Patty may want to consider, if he's playing well, being in that series, he could pick up some pretty good coin. There's $1.5 million that goes to the Race to Dubai winner. It isn't nearly the $65 million that gets split up in the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup, but with a total of $22 million in prize money and $7.5 million in the bonus pool, you know, this is $29.5 million, a sizable amount for the European Tour to be handing out in November. So I don't expect much different. I think Rory McIlroy's playing well. You know, we're going to see him probably walk away with that thing again so he can add the FedEx Cup and the Race to Dubai all in the same year. That'll be something. Danny Willett, on the strength of his win at the Masters way back in April, still leads the Race to Dubai ranking with Open champion, champion golfer of the year, Henrik Stenson, in second, Rory McIlroy, Alex Noren, and Tyrell Hatton. There's a familiar name for you. Rounding out the top five, Carlos. And that's all I have for the backspin tonight.
Well, Rory must do very well in the Race to Dubai because the lead that Danny Willett has is really substantial. So we'll see. He really will need to do some magic to win it this year. But, hey,
I wouldn't be surprised if he wins a couple of those things.
I don't know. But there's something I'm going to talk about and right now in the Par 5 News, and maybe that'll give you some ideas that he may or may not. We'll see. But anyway, with that, we wrap up our week in backspin. We're going to take our first short break, and when we come back, we have the Par 5 News, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News. And Fred, we're going to be talking a lot about the golf business, media, mergers, acquisitions, a lot of things today about that topic because there's a lot of news happening for the whole year about this. And you're going to kick off the Par 5 News with some more news about the golf business.
Yeah, Carlos, over the last several weeks, we've been documenting the bankruptcies and mergers and, you know, IPOs and all that stuff. And so we've got some more news this week to talk about to start off the Par 5 News. It was announced yesterday that Dick's Sporting Goods won the bidding for defunct Golfsmith for a mere $70 million. Dick's plans to keep open at least 30 of the 109 Golfsmith stores and wind down the rest with liquidators. It plans to keep about 500 of the company's employees. With the bid, Dick's becomes the largest U.S. golf retailer. It was Dick's, if you remember, that started the downfall of TaylorMade when they refused to accept shipment of TaylorMade's constant marketing of new drivers and equipment at their 500 stores. And also, Dick's made golf news last year when it laid off 500 PGA member pros that worked in the golf section of every Dick's stores. So Dick's also owns Golf Galaxy. And with these new Golfsmith stores, it seems to be signaling a new interest in the golf business. Another item that we've been following is the Titleist IPO, which is going to happen this week. Titleist parent company, Acushnet, is going public. The market value of the company is estimated around $1.7 billion, with a B. The sale of 19.3 million shares, priced between $21 and $24, is expected to raise $435 million in cool cash. Previous investors, not the company, will reap the proceeds. Fila Korea, which has owned Acushnet since 2011, will maintain the majority of the voting shares of Acushnet. And with these two restructures of the golf retail business, maybe TaylorMade now will find a suitable buyer to guarantee continued production of their products. Carlos, you know, as good as their stuff is, as good a staff as they have, I can't believe somebody isn't out there snapping them up, but I'm sure there's some negotiations going on, and I believe you even have some more news about TaylorMade.
Oh, I do, and it was about Rory McIlroy. You know, he plans to move on from his Nike Golf driver and into a TaylorMade M2 driver starting at this week's WGC HSBC Champions. No laying offs, Chris Solomon. He reported that McIlroy will be making the switch at the China-based event, sharing a picture that appears to be McIlroy's launch monitor numbers, and if those were some impressive numbers. And that's with the same driver that Brooks Koepka switched to in time for the Ryder Cup. At the Ryder Cup, Brooks Koepka, as you might remember, put an M2 into play, while Paul Casey has also tried one in his recent hot streak, which he says he hits it further, but not as accurately as his Nike driver. Jamie Lovemark, Nick Whiteley, and Thornbjørn Olsen have all been spotted with TaylorMade drivers as well in recent weeks. Russell Henley has been spotted with a full bag of Titleist equipment, while Patrick Rogers and Tony Finau have both been spotted with Callaway clubs in the bag. You know, the M2 driver is among a small subset of drivers on the market that can work in concert with the right shaft to deliver exceptionally low spin off the tee, in some rare cases getting the spin rate around 2,000 RPMs. You know, that spin rate, in combination with his high swing speed, a positive angle of attack, and an ideal launch angle in that 11 to 13 degree range, can lead to an astounding 330 yards, will do, and more importantly, equally eye-popping roll. In other words, if you thought, as you should, that Rory McIlroy was long, he's about to get even longer, or maybe inaccurate. So depending on what you see, but definitely he's going to get even longer. Rory has previously said that he wasn't looking to sign with a new equipment manufacturer anytime soon, but since Nike Golf announced in August that it would be phasing out its golf ball and golf club business, its staffers have been given the green light to find new equipment deals. While no announcement has been made of a McIlroy signing with TaylorMade, this could be a tip off his hand toward future equipment changes. And this could be huge news, given the rumors that Tiger Woods' new umbrella company, TGR, and no pun intended for Arnie, right, because of the umbrella company, could be buying TaylorMade. Fred, Tiger would basically, if this is true, basically be then sponsoring all the biggest hitters in the game, DJ, Jason Day, Rory, and possibly Brooks Koepka. Maybe Tony Finau, too. Wow, this is juicy, Fred. This is juicy.
Well, yeah, it is, Carlos. And, you know, earlier in the year, I tried TaylorMade and Ping because I'd hit a Ping when I was playing last spring. I tried one of a Ping driver from a guy I was playing with, from a playing partner. He was just hitting it so well. And I thought I hit the Ping pretty good. I thought I liked it. And so I came home, went to the range, and took an M2 out and the TaylorMade or the Ping. And I did like the M2 a little bit better. It makes a funny sound when you hit it, but I hit it a little better trajectory with the M2. So my slow swing speed, I don't think it really matters much what I hit. You know, they all go about the same. But these guys, when they get the right equipment in their hand, it really makes a difference. Hey,
know,
Carlos.
Just to add you something on that, I've tested the M2. I have the M1, if that's the one I use. But I still can't get to the M2. I don't know. I like still the M1, and maybe I don't know, but I'm not a good golfer anyway, so who am I to talk to about? But, you know, it's just that the M2, it does not include that T-Track system,
right,
which allows golfers to dial in almost any shot. But
right,
it does have a massive sweet spot. But to me, that T-Track system, makes a difference. But, you know, that's for maybe better for golfers like us. And it's better suited the M2 for the big hitters.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of supposed to be the other way around. The M2 is supposed to be more for the average golfer. That's the way they designed it. But when I talked to the executive, when I talked to the technicians down at the PGA Golf Show in January, they said that, you know, we would see pros playing with the M2 because of the way it feels and the way they're able to move the ball with it. So, hey, Carlos, we've got a couple of dumb PGA Tour rules to discuss on the Par 5 News tonight. I know the PGA Tour doesn't have any dumb rules. But they do. They really do. William McGuirk is a defending champion at the Sanderson Farm Championship this week. But he's not allowed to play in the event. He can't defend his title. He's eligible to play in the WGC HSBC in China, but he's not playing over there either. He decided not to go all the way to Asia, leave his family. He's taking some time off. It's the off season. He needs some time off. A PGA Tour member is not allowed to play in an opposite field event if he is eligible to play in the Invitational. That's the rule. McGuirk did get permission to play in the Pro-Am and is spending Wednesday flying to Jackson, Mississippi to do just that and then fly back home. McGuirk said, last year, Joe Sanderson, the owner and the CEO of Sanderson Farms, stepped up and guaranteed to sponsor the tournament for 10 more years. That's huge. We as players need to support that. We need to support what that tournament does for that children's hospital there. That's why I'm coming there, to support all that. Joe Sanderson did sign an agreement with the PGA Tour to continue sponsoring Mississippi's only PGA Tour event through 2026 last year. The tournament does raise more than $1.1 million for the Batson Children's Hospital at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. Another reason McGuirk wants to support Sanderson, there's something else. Joe Sanderson is bringing one of his poultry places to the area I grew up in, North Carolina. That's going to be a lot of jobs for a lot of folks that need jobs where I come from. McGuirk won Jack Nicklaus's Memorial Tournament last year and finished number 24 in the FedEx Cup with $3.6 million in earnings for the year. So here's a guy that wants to go support, you know, the PGA Tour. He wanted to go play in the Sandersons, but he's not allowed. You know, it just seems like kind of a dumb rule to me. I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to give some other guys a chance to get some starts on the tour. I understand that. But, man, in this case, they might want to rethink that a little bit. You know, that another unintended consequence of a dumb PGA Tour rule, Paul Casey has to forego playing in the AT&T Pebble Beach Championship to put another event on his schedule next year. A few years ago, the Tour and Tim Fincham made a rule that players with less than 25 starts in a calendar year had to play in an event they hadn't entered in the last 4 years. The rule was meant to entice Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, who played a minimum amount of events each year, and only at the larger tournaments, to visit the lesser venues to boost ticket sales and help out the sponsors. In this case, Casey, who has played less than 25 events, has to make sure he visits some new events in 2017 to assure he maintains his card for 2018. See, that's the thing, Carlos. When you go around making all these rules, you don't think of all the consequences it's going to have down the road, especially when you're making rules that are just meant for Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson or one or two elite players. There's always things that happen that that you really just don't mean to have happen. So PGA Tour's got some work to do. They'll get it figured out, though. They do a pretty good job, really, all in all.
You think they will?
I do. I have faith in them.
Okay. Well, I'll trust you. Not them. I'll trust you, your judgment on that. So I'll see. I'm still on the lookout for that. But we'll see. Those are just dumb things to revisit. But, hey, let me talk about another elite player. When I talk first about Rory McIlroy now, let's talk about Lydia Ko. You know, after a two-year stint, she has decided it was time to move on from her caddy. And the player who will be working with him now is good in her own right. Lydia Ko is arguably the best player in all of golf, and it's in part because of her caddy, Justin Hamilton. But the young dead-eye pin seeker has decided that she wanted a change, so after 2 years and 10 LPGA Tour victories, Ko made the decision to let Hamilton go. Although that move came out of left field, we've seen numerous golfers go through different caddies a lot of the times. Jessica Korda, among others on the LPGA Tour, was one of the players who did so in the past. But this begs the question, is this move a simple papering over bigger problems? The world number one has endured a horror stretch by her high standards over the past month or so, and poor Jason Hamilton has gone. All those great memories of wins together, including her two majors, burn on the altar of sacrifices to the golfing gods. Lydia Ko, let me tell you, she's unbelievable. She's the world number one. She was the youngest golfer of either gender to be ranked number one in the world. She was the youngest to win a professional event. She was the youngest to win a major. She was the youngest to win five times. The youngest to get 10 wins. She was the youngest to win five times in one season. Of course, we expected more from her from what we're getting right now. But I bring you another question. And here's the reasoning first before I bring you a question. You know, it may be the easiest and the cliche, the oldest cliche. You know, I'm not playing well, so I'm the caddy, so change it. But looks like clearly it's a band-aid on a bigger problem. Hamilton wasn't causing her to miss fairways and greens. That's down to Lydia Ko's and her swing coach, David Ledbetter. So the question should be, is David Ledbetter improving Lydia Ko's swing, or is he ruining it? Let me tell you, he's great. He's a great pro. He has a lot of ability, a lot of knowledge and all that. I'm not saying that he's bad. Sometimes there's just people that are not fit for some people. And he's the man that you've heard quoted so far and wide, extolling the virtues of the A-Swing. Order the board, the book and video on his toll-free number, which he's introduced to call over the game over the past couple of years. Extra yards on demands, he promised, as they tinkered with her swing in the last off-season. But a look at the stats show a different picture. Actually, they show almost the same picture. Average distance of 247 yards this year. Average distance of 250 yards last year. So Ko has changed that delightful swing for the loss of 3 yards on average. I hope there is a money-back guarantee with the free stake knives, you know. There's a fewer dangerous things for a professional golfer than a pursuit of more distance. Just ask Luke Donald, a former Brains number one, who decided he had to hit the ball further to contend in majors. And how did that work out? Well, suffice to say, he couldn't make a weak European Ryder Cup team for Hazeltine, and he's now ranked number 73 in the world. As well as losing yards, Ko has developed a nasty miss to the left, one of the perils of a draw. You know, that's a shot that moves from right to left. She has hit 70% of fairways this year. Last year, that figure was 75%. Less distance and less accuracy is not a good combination. There has been a bit of a buzz from those in the know, including Aussie Major winner Jeff Ogilvy, that her swing changes don't make sense. Most golfers try to eradicate a miss to the left, Tiger Woods and Dustin Johnson, for example, while Lydia has voluntarily introduced one. leasing more freeways has had a knock-on effect, too. Her greenspan regulation have also dropped from 77% last year to 71% this year. Now, is her slump down to those swing changes? It's hard to say for certain, but it's a hell of a lot more likely than being the fault of Jason Hamilton. Quite possibly, it could be simply just exhaustion. It's a long season, and thanks to the Olympics, even longer this year. She probably just needs a decent rest to recharge, but due to sponsorship commitments on the Asian swing, she needs to turn up at those tournaments to which she has committed. From all accounts, her team wanted Cole to wait until the end of the season before making any changes, but she was adamant she wanted Hamilton gone now. Remember, this was a man who talked her out of going for the green in two at the ANA Inspiration this year when she needed a birdie. She listened and was rewarded with a birdie after a perfect wedge to win her second major. Blaming the caddy is a dangerous road to go down. Just ask Robert the Beast Allenby and the 20-odd caddies he's hired and fired. As for Hamilton, Hannah Yang, who is one of the sport's rising stars and is one of the biggest characters, will be the new golfer that Hamilton will look for next. It makes you wonder, though, since Yang is now working with Coe's former caddy, could this mean more success for the young, expressive LPGA Tour star? If not, then it would be time to question the importance of a caddy. But time will only tell how the new tag team of Hamilton and Yang will work out. As for Coe, incredibly, she went through 7 caddies during her rookie season, but obviously being a rookie can be tough, and she prevailed despite the numerous changes. One thing is for certain, Cole and Yang will continue to dazzle golf fans everywhere for a long time, but Fred, I ask you, as a teaching pro that you are, am I on the right track of this about her swing? What's your take on this? Because to me, it was unwarranted that Jason Hamilton had to be fired. To me, I see a problem with her swing. I don't think that David, as good as he is being good for her.
Well, a couple things in there, Carlos. Number one, golfers are notorious for constantly tinkering with things. You know, if they're playing well, they always feel they can think they can play better. And Lydia Ko was playing at a level way above everybody else. But the problem with that is that the people below her, Ryuji Tanigarn, and Brooke Henderson, you know, Inji Chun, they keep getting better and better and better and getting closer and closer. And the other part of that is that when she played alongside Ryuji Tanigarn and she's hitting it out there off the world, you know, Brooke Henderson outdrives Lydia by 20 yards. Aria, when she hits it, you know, she outdrives Lydia by, you know, 30, easy, probably more. Charlie Hall is long, you know, and Lydia has to play with these other women in the group, and she sees that, so she wants to hit it farther. You know, that's only normal. So now the next thing is David Ledbetter. Well, first of all, I don't know how much time Ledbetter's actually spending with Lydia. There was one of his assistants that was really assigned to working with Lydia full-time. I'm sure David is up to date on exactly what's going on. I'm sure he looks in from time to time, and he might have even had to plan on what changes to make in the swing to try and get longer. To me, getting longer with the way that she swings and the way she hits the ball is more of a fitness thing and a stretching and a flexibility thing. So, you know, and she's going to get a little bit stronger as she gets even a little bit older. So I'm not sure that she should be worrying about that. You know, when she left her old coach and decided to go with Ledbetter when she moved to the U.S. and joined the LPGA Tour, I kind of thought that was a mistake. And she may end up going back to the other guy. Who knows? But she plays so steady, so good, so solid. Carlos, I really feel like you were on the right thing when you said, is this just a natural progression? I think it really is. She was playing at such a high level for such a long time at such a young age. This is only, you know, and I'm looking at some numbers here, Carlos. For the year, she's had 4 victories. This is a bad year for her. She's had 4 wins. She's won $2.4 million. Yeah, Aria slipped around her a little bit. She's ahead of her in the money list. But, you know, she's had 13 top tens. One of her wins this year was a major. She's having a pretty good year. I think she just needs to lighten up a little bit, get back to enjoying herself on the golf course. You know, we're always used to seeing Lydia smiling and, you know, generally walking down the fairways. So I think it's more of a mental thing than anything else, Carlos, to answer your question.
Well, we'll see. I mean, to me, just to finish the subject, yeah, I understand the point that Aria and Brooke were out hitting her, but, you know, she was much better all around than they were and everybody else. So, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe she needs a break. You know, like I said, maybe it's that. It's been a long season. And not only her, but we've seen Brooke and Adia also go through stretches lately that haven't been like them. So we'll see. We'll see next year that when after they take the break, how they come back. But anyway, you have one more news before we have our VIP who's ready on the line waiting for us. So go ahead and talk to us about it.
Yeah, real quickly here, you know, Brendan Steele won the Fries.com a couple weeks ago. And due to some coaching help he got from Dave Phoenix Farrell, who is the bass player for the rock band Linkin Park. You know, how does a rock star give advice and coaching tips to a professional golfer, you may ask? Well, Steele is a fan of Linkin Park's music, and Farrell is a 4 handicap, so not a bad golfer, who watches a lot of PGA Tour golf. I watch a lot of PGA Tour golf, you know. I'm just saying. They originally met through a mutual friend backstage at a concert a couple years ago. They quickly developed a friendship, and plus when they're both home, they live about 20 minutes from each other in Southern California. So it just only naturally began playing golf together. Farrell is a student of statistical analysis, kind of like Moneyball and baseball, and began working the numbers on Steele's game. He pored over statistics and soon began tracking all of his rounds in notebooks, calculating the percentage of putts made from various distances, ranges, and scribbles along the way, like a golf version of A Beautiful Mind. I just started thinking the difference between him shooting 62 and his usually 67 or whatever is that makeable range putt, Farrell explained. I noticed that when we were playing, then I started looking at PGA Tour statistics, which include make percentages of all the different ranges. One that I found was 8 to 16 feet. After breaking it down, he discovered that the PGA Tour leader from this range made right around 30% of his attempts. The average was about 20%. Steele was way below average. He was only making 10% from that range. I saw that he was averaging 5 to 6 putts per round in this range. I don't know that much about golf or statistics, but I could see the variance potential in that range for improvement. It seemed like an area he could go out and practice. Well, Steele admitted it sounds strange to be taking putting advice from a rock star, but Dave's a really smart guy, and he loves both golf and statistics. When he came to me with the numbers, it made a ton of sense, so I started paying attention to the data. I took it to one of my coaches, and he developed some drills that focus on that length of putt. Thus, Steele began a daily regimen of practice that included time spent on putts from 8 to 16 feet. And his statistics have improved dramatically. With the result, a win at the Fries, the first event of the 2017 season. Evidently, rock stars have some talents other than just sex, drugs, and rock and roll, Carlos. Carlos, you're on mute.
I said that's a series. It's not actually a fact that happened. So anyway, well, that will wrap up our Par 5 news, and when we are going to take a short break, when we come back, our VIG is already here. His name is Jeff Root. Don't go away.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the VIG, very important guest of the week. Our guest this evening is Jeff Rood, who was a longtime golf writer for Golf Week magazine. He also did a stint on the Golf Channel and has covered every tournament and major event in golf over the last 20 years. We're pleased to have him here. Jeff, hi, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
I'm fantastic. If the Cubs were leading instead of trailing, I'd be even
I was just going to report to you. I got it on the screen here, Jeff. They're down 2-0 the top of the second. So, but you do have a base runner, so there is hope.
There is, and we escaped with the bases loaded in the last time the Indians batted. So, could be worse.
hey Jeff,
guys,
I was listening
to you. I was listening to what you're talking about. The rock star telling. Steele to go work on your weaknesses, which is not new, but what's new is that the rock star took the time to drum up some stats to figure out what his weakness was.
I know. Isn't that a good story?
It is a good story, and it reminds me of, you know, Dave Stockton, one of his putting tips was he always practiced 12-footers, and Lauren Roberts always practiced 4-footers and 40-footers, figuring that those are the two things that really keep a round going. You need to lag it close from 40, and you need to make them all from 4.
You know, just along that subject, you know, the golf that I've been playing lately, I really struggle from long distance with a putter, and I don't practice them. You know, I go out and practice chipping and stuff, but I don't practice long putts. When I get on a big green, and when I go on some of these trips and stuff, or go somewhere, and man, I just feel like I'm lost. It's just I just know it's 3 putts waiting to happen when I'm out there over 30 feet. So maybe I should go do that, huh?
I think 40-footers and 4-footers. Let me know how that goes.
Okay. Hey, I know you're on a little golfing tour around Lake Michigan, and you kind of hit some of my favorite spots the last few days. So I need to get your thoughts first on Sand Valley in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Sand Valley's in the middle of nowhere in Wisconsin, a couple hours from Milwaukee, three and a half from Minneapolis, 2 hours from Green Bay. The latest Coeur Crenshaw Taj Mahal, the latest Mike Kaiser gem. Mike Kaiser, of course, the founder at Bandon Dunes. Sand Valley looks like you could pick it up and place it right at Bandon Dunes. It looks like a sister course to Bandon Trails. It looks like it would fit right into the collection. Great Coeur Crenshaw design, linksy, great piece of land, sand dunes everywhere. You know, as the story goes, you know, Mike Kaiser's first GM at Bandon Dunes was Josh Lesnick, who is now the president of Kemper Sports Management. He sent Josh up there a couple of years ago to go look at this piece of land in the middle of Wisconsin. Josh went up hoping to say, Mike, I didn't like it. He came back and said, Mike, I've got bad news for you. I loved it. And here we are with the latest. The second course is being developed right now by David McClay Kidd, who did Bandon Dunes. So that's going to be, you know, Wisconsin, you know, I'm in northern Michigan right now, or have been the last 3-4 days, but which is a golf destination. But Wisconsin's now a golf destination. You can fly into Milwaukee, and you can play Erin Hills, Black Wolf Run, Whistling Straits, and go over to Sand Valley, and you've had a great golf trip.
Absolutely. Those are all great, great locations. And so, like you say, you came around to Michigan, and you spent a little time at Forest Dunes, and you got to play Kingsley Club. Those are two of my all-time favorites, all of those courses.
Well, I think, you know, you could make an argument, in fact, an easy argument, not even really an argument. You can make an easy case that of those you can play, the ones that aren't private, Forest Dunes Golf Club, which was the course designed by Tom Weisskopf, is the best of the lot in northern Michigan. Bay Harbor has some beautiful views, and Belvedere is like going back in time, and Treetops is a great place for a guy's trip, but for one track, the Weisskopf course in Forest Dunes is great. And now you have the loop, you know, the reversible 18 holes. You play it one day clockwise, you play it the next day counterclockwise, you play it backwards, that Tom Doak did. And, after playing it, the crazy thing is that if you, after playing the first round, when you go back the next day and play it the other way, if you just drop somebody off and blindfolded them and just sent them out and say, don't, you know, just go play, you would not know you were on the same property. You would not know you were on the same, and it's remarkable how they were able to piece that together and have two completely different looking golf courses.
Yeah, I just love it. I know you and I were talking that, they probably got a little tweaking there to do. There's a couple of greens that are
right. Kind
of unfair
right. Yet,
and, they got some things right. To do there yet, which I'm sure they will do, and I know they want to clean some stuff, the edges up a little bit, but, they were just really open for a limited play this fall. Next year they'll do some stuff, but it's just it's a wonderful property. Those two courses, the reversible, then along with the Weisskopf, gives you a lot of different looks there. It's Forest Dunes, in my mind, it's going to be sold out. I mean, people are going to go there. And for in the Midwest, it's a lot cheaper going there than going clear out to Oregon or going clear up to Cabot Links or someplace like that. So,
They're not done. They're doing a new 18 there, and they're doing a putting course that's going to be open 24/7. It's going to have a bar, and it's going to have lights. So
cool.
Now, and the cottages there are fantastic. You walk out of your cottage, walk onto the first tee.
Yeah, they're really nice. And the clubhouse, the food is great. It's a wonderful place. But it's all golf. There's nothing else there to do. You go there to play golf. That's it.
Right.
Hey, Jeff, you were a golf writer with Golf Week for a long time, and given all the upheaval currently in the golf business world, have you seen any precedent like we're seeing with the Dick's Sporting Goods buying Golfsmith, who was in bankruptcy, Acushnet that owns Titleist, now they're having their IPO this week, TaylorMade still on the selling block. There's some other things that have happened, some large wholesalers and retailers. The one right there in Michigan, King Par, that they closed the doors or was forced to close the doors a few weeks ago.
Right.
You've been around. You've seen this stuff. What's your take on this stuff?
Well, I think it's in a sense it's a continuation. I mean, I when I got to Golf Week in 1995, 21 years ago, there was so much consolidation in the early days of Golf Week. I mean, look at all the equipment companies that are no longer there. I mean, we got Ram and Tommy Armour Golf, and Callaway bought Odyssey, and Acushnet bought Cobra, and there was just so much consolidation. And one effect it had on publishing is there weren't as many advertisers. Okay, the number of advertisers shrunk, and it forced some magazines like Golf Week. Golf Week never did travel pieces. It forced us to do travel pieces because the travel advertising brought in another $1 million a year. So, as far as the consumer goes, I don't know if we're at the point, where there isn't enough competition where the prices of the clubs will be high, but I wrote in a column 5 years ago or so, golf is a great game, but not necessarily a great business.
Yeah, I felt the same way for a long time. I love golf. I like to go to golf courses, but I never would. I mean, even a long time ago in the boom years, I wouldn't want to have owned the golf course. It just did not look like a good business model to me. Only the people that just love the game are the guys that own the courses, it looks like to me. So, anything else that's going on that we need to know about that you're up to?
No. I'm on a bucket list trip, and I started it. I sent out an email on July 29th. The subject line said proposal. I said the Bears and Packers play October 20 in Green Bay. The World Series starts 5 days later. The Cubs are going to go. who wants to hop on the bus. And the flights, it's the 12th. The Cubs co-opted by beating the Giants in the NLDS and the Dodgers in the NLCS. I'm one out sitting on a rooftop on Friday. I'm going to the Bulls opener on Thursday. You're seeing my grandkids tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday. Life cannot get better.
Good for you, man. Carlos, you got questions for Jeff before we let him get on with it?
No, I'm just going to let him go. I don't want to – I want him to get the Cubs going and get that. But really, thank you for all the great input. I really am pulling for the Cubs, so don't tell Fred if he doesn't find out.
All right, I'm just going to leave you with this. Go Tribe, Jeff. Have a good one. Be careful.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
And with that, we end up our VIG, Very Important Guest of the Week, thanks to Jeff Rood. We're going to take one more short break. When we come back, we're going to have our final thoughts. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our final pot. I'm going to start talking that there is a clear impetus from the PGA Tour to expand within Asia. The Tour announced this past week that the next season's PGA Tour schedule will feature the normal events in China, which is the HSBC Champions, which was played this week, and in Malaysia, the CIMB Classic, which was played last week. But it will also feature a new event in South Korea. The tournament does not have a sponsor, though. The CJ Corporation, which specializes in a number of different industries and used to be part of Samsung. That's the one that's going to be sponsoring. It's going to be called the CJ Cup at Nine Bridge and will be played October 16 to 22 in 2017. So now there will be a full Asian swing with these three events in the fall. As I have said, with the European Tour being already global and making big strides in attracting new fans and sponsors, it's great that the PGA Tour is branching out to yet to another country, and hope this event really is, and its $9.25 million purse, thrive there for a really long time. South Korea has a great base in golf with the women, and this could help further development on the men's side, which really is thriving as well. And finally, Brent Grimsley reports on the selection of a local team to build a resort-style hotel, restaurant, and villas at Chambers Bay. While getting the turf a little stronger is a priority for some, and stadium mounts that actually work, unlike the ones Robert Trent Jones envisioned, we all know by now the real key to landing a repeat major centers around high-end lodging for the decision makers. The U.S. Open put the Chambers Bay course on the worldwide golf map. Pierce County is hoping a new resort, including a hotel and a Tom Douglas restaurant, will put this place on the worldwide travel destination map. The golf tournament brought visitors from all over the world, but they had no place to stay near the course except private homes. The group known as Chambers Bay Development LLC, headed up by AppShare Construction of Puyallup, beat out another group for a bid to build these new facilities. The plan is for an 80-room hotel, 5,000-square-foot event and meeting space, spa with 6 treatment rooms, and a 200-seat Tom Douglas restaurant. It would be the chef's first outside of Seattle. The cost is expected to reach $45 million. Allen said the project would be 100% privately funded. The county executives hope to have the resort ready to go for a major pro golf tournament in the summer of 2019. While Brett Denover said the golf cottages planned for the rich are now on hold for now, they're just concentrating on the new clubhouse, hotel, and restaurant.
Yeah, Carlos, the Chambers Bay, that's such a beautiful property. I know exactly where they're going to set that hotel in there. The views from there will be fantastic out over the Puget Sound. And it is just, I mean, to get back in there, you go through all residential area. There are little small streets and winding, and they really need a good hotel back there if they're going to continue to have major events there. But that'll be a good deal. Hey, did you see the picture that's been going around on social media this week of the 5'6" Gary Player standing beside and playing golf with the 7'6" Yao Ming in China last week? Player barely comes to Ming's waist. I mean, it is hilarious. They're walking down the fairway together. He looks like Player looks like a toddler or something. You know, like a little kid walking with an adult. Hurricane Matthew, you know, we've been documenting, made a mess on Hilton Head and especially to Harbortown Golf Links. But the Golf Channel is reporting that the recovery continues and officials are confident the iconic layout will reopen before the end of the year. Tournament director Steve Wilmot says Harbortown lost about 800 trees. He toured the course and said the staff had already cleared away many of the fallen trees. A press release issued by Sea Pines Resort said officials hoping to reopen the course by November 21st. So it's taken them a while to get it back in shape. And I know I saw pictures of the marina, that beautiful marina there with the red and white lighthouse. That marina was totally washed away. I mean, it was just totally gone, blown up on the ground, on the land there. It was a mess. As far as the course, Wilmot said there might be a few less trees and a couple of holes might play a little easier, but it's amazing how much progress has been made. From tee to green, it's spotless right now. They've gone hole by hole with a tree company. Holes number 2, 9, 10, and 16 suffered the brunt of the tree damage, and Wilmot said there is still concern how the salt water that came up on shore from the storm surge, how that's going to affect the grass on 16, 17, and 18 out there along the ocean. So Wilmot says he expects the course to be in tournament shape for next April's Heritage, and said his foundation was devising a plan to help the Hilton Head community recover from the storm. Tiger, you know, as you knew, withdrew from the Fries.com a couple weeks ago, but he did find time to visit Charlie Rose's television show for an interview. He said he has accepted the fact that he will not win 18 major championships to outdo Jack Nicklaus. He will win more. Soon to be 41 years old with a bad back and creaky knees, he better get going pretty soon. Time's a-wasting, Tiger. Get one with it, boy. Carlos, you had a thing posted on Facebook last week about AT&T buying Time Warner, which includes some big stuff, CNN, Warner Brothers, HBO, and also they will have increased their huge internet presence. So this is just ties right into what we keep talking about with the golf business. All these media companies, they're growing and they want to get more databases, more internet exposure, as well as combining their assets on the television side.
Oh, they do, and the problem—well, not the problem—the situation, like we talked about a little bit last week, is that the carriers, as we know them, they're just not going to be the same in just in a few years. They are not anymore service providers. They have to become content providers, and that's why they have to get right now and form their own media brands. That's why we're just seeing the top of it. And it started all when Comcast last year said that they had more internet subscribers than they had cable providers. And Comcast acquired NBC Universal. Now AT&T, we see that they're going to acquire Time Warner. So We soon will see more of these mergers and acquisitions because, as I said, there's not going to be any more service providers. There are going to be media providers, and they have to do this vanity projects for telecom executives. It has to be a way to diversify the business that doesn't actually have any meaningful synergies anymore to exploit for it.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me. You know, we've been talking about it and watching it, the whole thing, and the effects that it has on the golf business. So, you know, we're both kind of in this business a little bit and in different parts of it, and it's just an interesting thing to keep an eye on, Carlos.
Yeah, if you see right now, the AT&T is trying to attract some customers already. You know that they are the owners of DirecTV. So if you're a DirecTV subscriber, they tell you that if you change now to AT&T, they're going to give you an unlimited data. And it's easy to imagine a couple of ways that this offering could be made more attractive to customers. The one by buying Time Warner, AT&T might effectively subsidize the cost of a more robust streaming per package, you know, for consumers. That would mean that instead of paying $14.99 a month for HBO, now or about $16 a month for NBA League Pass, they might get HBO, basketball from TNT, news from CNN, and a library of films from Warner Brothers for a single monthly fee, which is what people are trying to say. And we talked about this. It's not all the channels that we want. It's just some things that we want, and we can pay that single monthly fee, but if I get what I really, really want, they could push things further by packaging this streaming bundle with its mobile service, just like they're doing now, offering a skinny bundle at a discount to anyone who uses AT&T as their mobile carrier. And finally, it has also hinted that it might find ways to use advertising to bring, you know, Time Warner's content to people in new ways. So there's a lot of two-sided business model advertising and subscription base that gives the customer the largest amount of premium content at the best value.
As long as it costs me less and I get more stuff, that's what I want, Carlos.
That's what's coming. So do you have anything else before we close the show tonight?
That wraps up what everything I've got tonight, Carlos. Unless you've got something else, I think that pretty much wraps up Back Nine Report for October 25th, 2016.
You just said it. That wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDrive.com. We thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Jeff Rude. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Bat9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.